Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Friday, March 15th starts now. On the show today, Ben talks the top stories of the week with none other than podcaster and real estate guru, Mark Wallace. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to know what's happening in politics, obviously, you're listening to this show. You want to know art, music, culture, anything else, Chicago, head to chicagoreader.com. And you'll probably find the answers. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, just head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Fannie Willis Friday, and here's why. Actually, it's a what a week, and my dear friend Mark Wallace is standing by. He's going to bring him on. This man has opinions on absolutely everything. It kind of reminds me of myself. He's got opinions on everything, and I love that. Not afraid to talk about him. National, local, county, et cetera, and so forth. We'll just get the ball starting. I woke up this morning to see a headline, breaking news. That the presiding judge in the Donald Trump corruption trial in Atlanta, the one where Donald Trump tried to steal the election, you know, it's like a RICO trial, that he was running a racket. He was like a gang. Well, he is a gangster. Let's take like a gangster. His gangster-like behavior in Georgia, where he tried to steal the election by claiming that it was stolen from him, was going to continue. At least Fannie Willis would be able to continue as the chief prosecutor. And as you know, Donald Trump, his allies and their lawyers had done a counteroffensive against Fannie Willis in one of the most, on one level, I had to just laugh in disbelief that they would try to get away with it because she was having an affair or romance with someone who was working with her on the trial. How that is a conflict of interest, I do not know. It is not. And as I've pointed out many times, pretty much every single show on TV about lawyers, prosecutors, police has an affair embedded in the plot between the chief prosecutor. I just saw this on Bosch. God, I love Bosch. Bosch is a police show on, I think it's on Prime, where the cop is having an affair with the prosecutor. It was in The Wire. It's been in every Michael Connelly novel and John Grisham. It's just life. It's called life, office romance. Somehow or other, they twisted this into a reason to end the prosecution of Trump in Georgia. And for a second, I thought they might do it. They might be successful, but common sense prevailed, at least on this front, and the judge said that Fannie Willis can continue, but the man that she had the affair with, Nathan Wade, had to drop out. So it's one or the other, the judge said. Either Fannie Willis continues, drops out, or Nathan Wade drops out. That's a duh choice. It's not really even a choice. Anyway, so that is the news that broke this morning, and I think that's as good as any to open up the conversation with news of the week. So Mark Wallace, podcaster, businessman, extraordinaire. First of all, welcome back to the show, and jump right in. Fannie Willis in Georgia. Go.
Well, thanks, Ben, for having me here again. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Well, listen, Fannie Willis brought this on herself. A seasoned trained prosecutor and lawyer should have known that when the defense attorney brought this motion, what she should have done is she should have come right out and said, yep, you got us. We had an affair. We were involved. Period. It would have been over with. There would have been no hearing. It would have been over with. Would have been disclosed. It was not the affair, but it was like everything else that happens. It's the cover up. It is the cover up that brought us to where we are from January to now, listening to the defense trying to basically lynch, if you will, this prosecutor, but she sort of fed herself into this. And so the judge found that there was no conflict, financial conflict of interest where she benefited financially. And essentially what they were saying was that she was engaged in this affair so that she could profit from, they both could profit from the prosecution of Donald Trump. There was nothing there, was nothing there at all. In fact, the judge never really, in his opinion, spoke to that. What he spoke to is the cover-up and the stench that it has now brought on to the case where he called it the appearance of it. And this all came from them just trying to cover it up rather than her just coming out and said, yes, we were involved, but it had nothing to do with the case and it would have been over with. Now, on the flip side of that, this was a win and a lose for both sides. On the other side, they don't have anything except for the judge referred to that the appearance of a legal question. So he fed that to the defense, and they're going to ride that all the way out through this trial because that is in his opinion. That language is in his opinion. And who knows whether or not they will try to use that on an appeal once he's convicted. But I don't think that it is going to, at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to exonerate him. I think he's going to get convicted of the crime. In this state crime, he's going to get convicted if he's foolish enough to go to trial, and he's going to end up going to jail. I don't think that with all his bravado, that when the screws continue to tighten, that he is going to show the man who he is really not, because he cannot avoid prison by even winning the presidency. He cannot avoid serving time once he's convicted. Nobody can prevent that. Not even the governor of the state of Illinois can prevent him from going to prison.
In Georgia.
Mm-hmm. He cannot avoid that. So this will be one of those cases when it comes down to the wire that he is going to cut a deal to try to save his hide from going to jail.
Okay, so let me push back on this. Because there's a lot to take a deep dive on. All right, so he will appeal this judge's ruling. It will be appealed. That will just drag on the start of the case. So the ruling about Fannie Willis being eligible to continue the prosecution, I believe, will be appealed. So the trial of Donald Trump will be delayed further. I don't believe that this ultimately should be removed. I think that would just be so extreme and so unwarranted that even MAGA judges would be reluctant. Well, they'd probably go along with it. But anyway, all right. So as to your prediction that he will be convicted and go to jail, I do believe this comes to trial, he'll be convicted. The evidence is overwhelming that he engaged in a conspiracy to defraud the public and steal the election. There's no doubt about it. We have the video of him on the phone with the Secretary of State, among other things. But if Donald Trump prevails and is elected president in November, electoral college victory, obviously I don't think he'll win a popular vote. If he prevails, he will never go to jail, Mark. And I'll tell you why I think that. I understand it's a state case, so he can't pardon himself. But I think that emboldened by the Supreme Court's ridiculous, absurd ruling in the Colorado case, which effectively has immunized him against the consequences of attempting to stage a coup, he will just ignore. He will just ignore the verdict in Georgia. He will just, you can't make him leave the White House and go to prison in Georgia, even if a jury.
Oh, sure you can.
How?
Sure you can. If there is a court order ordering for him to submit, the Secret Service has absolutely no authority to interfere with that. So they will be able to come to Washington or wherever he is and take him into custody. And the Secret Service cannot interfere with that. Period.
I don't believe the Supreme Court will allow that to happen. The U.S. Supreme Court, they threw out the Colorado case. They allowed him to be on the ballot. They cooked up an explanation that's completely ridiculous and absurd, that states don't have the right to police their own ballots, which is the exact opposite of what the Constitution allows, and the exact opposite of what's going on in states throughout the country right now, like where there's attempts to remove Bobby Kennedy Jr. from the ballot, et cetera, and so forth. So if they're willing to go that far to protect Donald Trump, I can't see five of them ordering him to abide by a judge's or a jury's verdict in Georgia. Do you?
Then that would just mean that we just need to throw, the grave is already dug, then we just need to throw the dirt on top of the grave. So that means that we essentially have no judiciary of the Supreme Court. It's over.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
So, well, the decision that states don't have the right to conduct their elections, which I thought that every state has the right to conduct their election, as noted in the Constitution that I've studied. And I did pass the bar, and I did graduate. And every place that I read in the Constitution that states operate their elections, not the federal government. So they just created their own de facto part of the Constitution that does not exist.
Yeah. Nine to nothing, Mark. They got the three Democrats to go along with it. Nine, I'm putting up the fingers. 9-0. So I just don't believe they got it in them to go against Donald Trump. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know why the three Democratic or the Democrats went along with that decision and the idea that because Elena, what's her name?
Kagan. Justice Kagan
raised the question that if we allow for one state to decide for other states, was the most ridiculous response as it relates to the Constitution, because every state has its own sovereign right and responsibility, according to the Constitution, to conduct the state election that participates in an election for president for the United States of America. Each state is supposed to and has the responsibility of doing that. And how they determine that Colorado now so no longer has that authority to conduct their own election, that they have to conduct an election according to what the United States Supreme Court has said. Basically, it said, we have no judiciary. And I have said all along that this case and the immunity case is going to determine whether or not we have a judiciary, period.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether the judiciary voluntarily eliminates itself as like an oversight. you know, the three branches of government, they're essentially ruling that they no longer exist as a branch.
Right.
So that ruling, that 9-0, I'll repeat it. And you're right. It was utterly absurd question that Elena Kagan raised. And here we're talking Colorado, but it also relates to what's going on in Georgia.
Mind you, and I was not a supporter of Elena Kagan being nominated to the bench because I don't think very much of her legal strength of the Constitution, and I was never a supporter of hers.
I've momentarily blanked. She was an Obama appointee, correct? Am I correct
yes.
on that?
Yes. She was an Obama appointee, and Obama really should have appointed, I forget the woman's name, but it was a black woman that is very talented. Her name escapes me right okay. now.
But my point is this, is that if Alabama, I say this all the time, if Alabama, in its infinite wisdom, wanted to retaliate for what Colorado did by cooking up a reason to bounce Biden from the ballot, that reason that they cook up would have to go to before the courts. Mm-hmm. So she said, oh, my goodness, this would just be utter chaos. And no, I don't. I think it would be called. It would be called the American system. It would have to go to the court, and Alabama's Republicans would have to convince a court, a judge, a jury, what have you, that Joseph Biden had done something that warrants kicking him off the ballot. And ultimately, it would go to the Supremes.
Right.
So the Supremes would have to decide. They ditched the whole thing. They ducked it, Mark. They didn't even deal with the insurrection. The court in Colorado ruled that Donald Trump was an insurrectionist. Evidence was placed before them, for and against that allegation, and they ruled on it. So if Alabama says, we think that Joe Biden is unwarranted to be president of the United States, or he violated, because what? I don't know. He has not policed the border correctly. Whatever reason they cook up, it would have to go before court. It's not utter chaos. I just feel the courts just ducked it, Mark. They didn't want to
deal with it. They didn't want to deal with it, but they dealt with it. I mean, that's why they're called the Supreme Court. They have to deal with things that other people can't deal with, and they have to be the last word. So that's why we call them Supreme Court justices. But in this case, you know, maybe the three liberal justices went along with that for that reason that you mentioned, so that they could insulate Joe Biden from going against that in another, you know, red state, or maybe a future president or nominee going through that. Maybe that's why they join and decide, let's deal with this once and for all, and say that states, they can conduct their elections, except for when it comes to whether or not somebody gets on the ballot or not for president of the United States of America. Maybe that's what they were thinking. It's not right according to, as I understand, the Constitution. Certainly is not right. Not to mention that all three of the justices in Colorado, it was a unanimous decision with two liberals and one conservative on the court that made that decision. So, but that doesn't, that really, that doesn't matter anymore. That standard is not respected anymore with this United States Supreme Court, because typically when there is a unanimous decision coming from an appellate court, the United States Supreme Court, on a rare occasion, are going to even take it up when something was written as unanimously and as strong of a legal argument as you can, which just absolutely affirms to us that we do not have a judiciary as we once had at the United States Supreme Court.
It's certainly not like the one that ordered Richard Nixon to turn over the tapes, which you and I are both old enough to remember.
Yes.
Both teenagers when that happened.
That's over with.
Yeah, those days are long gone. And that was a unanimous decision by the Supremes. All right.
Those are Republicans that I could go to lunch with. I can't even go to lunch with these Republicans today.
Okay, so to that point, politically, strategically, what happened in Georgia, here's how it has worked for Donald Trump's benefit. I have an acquaintance who is of the MAGA persuasion, although he pretends he's not. MAGA is funny, man. I almost have more respect for the MAGA people that just come right out and go on MAGA than the guys who conceal that they're, I'm not MAGA, I'm an independent. All right, whatever. Anyway.
Yes.
So the supposedly the chief witness against Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade, the one who was sort of testifying that if you who was allegedly testifying that their relationship was such that there could be a reason to believe that this whole entire investigation was set up to make money, which is such an absurd notion. But was this gentleman named Terrence Bradley? He went on the stand last week in the hearing, I think it was last week, and he said, no, that was not the case. He has no idea when the relationship began. But that totally undercut the argument that there was any kind of compelling witness to justify this accusation. That has not stopped MAGA and MAGA deniers, people who deny that they're MAGA, from saying, what about Terrence Bradley? Do you follow what I'm saying, Mark? Mm-hmm. In other words, this is not an honest fact-finding mission. This is a political game from start to finish where MAGA will continue to say that Terrence Bradley is a credible witness against Fannie Willis, even though he himself has said, I am not a credible witness to this point. Do you see what I'm saying? So, like, it already has served its purpose. They'll just keep repeating them to themselves, Terrence Bradley, even though it's not true. And they will somehow fortify themselves to justify voting for an insurrectionist. Your thoughts?
Well, this is why Fannie Willis was totally irresponsible in her response to this. I don't care who she was sleeping with. It happens all the time. But when you try to cover it up, that's when you always get into trouble, is when you cover up. That's why Donald Trump is in trouble in Florida, not because he had documents, but because of the cover-up, that he did. If he had just said, hey, I have the documents, come and get them, that wouldn't be a case today, right? But mean that the state case wouldn't be going forth, but it's the cover-up. And again, the judge alluded to that. He didn't even address the fact that there was a relationship, because the fact that there was a relationship showed no impropriety whatsoever. Maybe some people would say on the surface, you know, how could you do this? But that was done even before then. So, but it didn't matter. It is the cover up, and she should have come out. That's why I always point to Bill Clinton. Even though he lied about it, but he came right out. Somebody convinced him to come out and say, hey, acknowledge that you did this and take the wind out of their sails. And when he had the relationship with Monica Lewinsky, and when he came out and said, you know, he'd never did that, but he came back out, I think, within a week and said that it did happen. He neutralized any fire against him with that. Now, of course, they still try to impeach him and move him from office until a pornographer got involved, and that shut it down. So, but I think that that's what happens in all of these cases. In fact, you know, we know that it's the big cover-up that got them in trouble. So this is a gut punch for Fannie Willis. She's going to, for the integrity of the case, one, she's going to have to get rid of Nathan Wade. And two, she's going to have to turn this over to a special prosecutor to remove the stain of this, or at least because she cannot prosecute this. She cannot even supervise the prosecution of this and have this not become a real burden on the case. So it's too important of a case. And if she can get past the ego of it and accept that she put herself in this position and she put everybody else and she put the entire country in this position because we're all, you know, depending on this case to go forth and the way that it ought to. But if she stays involved in the case, she jeopardizes the integrity of the case. And I don't know how she could possibly prosecute this case by staying on the case. She's going to have to
be the central prosecutor in court addressing the jury. That's what you're talking about, correct?
Period. She's going to have to not be, she has to not be involved in it, period. She has to voluntarily withdraw herself from this and turn it over to somebody else to prosecute this case.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's no shortage of people who would be willing to do that because this is such a high profile case. Or I would expect there would be no shortage. Just as there's no, you know, we always ask the question, we have this conversation, like what lawyer in his or her right mind would take on Donald Trump as a client if, because he's so notorious for being a tightwad and not paying the people or trying to cut the amount of money he owes them who go to work for him. Or
no, he's not a tightwad. He just doesn't, he refuses to pay people.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know? Yeah.
I think he is a tightwad, but that's a whole other issue. And I, you know, I never heard anything about Donald Trump as a tipper. That's a whole other conversation. You know what I'm saying? Like, is he a tipper? You know what I mean? Like, leaves a healthy tip. So, but anyway, the point is obvious that people take the job as Donald Trump's criminal defense lawyer because it's give him a lot, draw a lot of attention to them. It'll be, it's like a promotion. It's, you know, it's marketing campaign. Puts them in the newspaper, puts them on the TV, puts them on the internet, et cetera, and so forth. So similarly, I would think there would be no shortage of ambitious prosecutors in Georgia, in Atlanta.
There are plenty of line prosecutors that would be standing in line, and she has plenty of them that are quite capable. But there are also plenty of them that are really upset with her because of what she has done to this case, because now they would have to go in and prosecute what is a very good case to prosecute, but they would have that stain of what she has done to this case by just not acknowledging that she was sleeping with somebody. I just don't understand why that it is so difficult for people to say, you know, all of us are here because somebody slept with somebody. Sleeping with people is not, you know, something new. I mean, we're here because somebody slept with somebody, not because they planned to have us. Yeah. They were sleeping with somebody to have some fun.
Yeah. That is true. I can't argue with that. By the way, I really don't want to go down the Bill Clinton path, Mark, because once I go down the Bill Clinton path, it's all over and we've just spent an hour talking Clinton.
Right.
I have many thoughts about Bill Clinton. So I'm just going to let you like go what you said and we'll move on. But I just need to know, when you said the pornographer, were you alluding to Ken Starr? Was that what you were alluding to?
No, Larry Flint.
Oh, Larry Flint. What role did Larry Flint have in this? I can't remember.
Larry Flint shut down the impeachment. Larry Flint offered $1 million bounty to anybody who had any sexual, dirt on anybody who was trying to prosecute this impeachment.
Yes.
And when Larry Flint offered that $1 million bounty, they shut the impeachment down quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Yeah. Larry Flint. Oh my God. I could go down that. I am not going down that. I could have a whole conversation with you about the career of Larry Flint. By the way, the movie, I don't know if you ever saw the movie about Larry Flint. It's a pretty good movie. Woody Harrelson. All right, let's move on from Clinton, Mark, because I fear that would be a long, long conversation. I want to get into the other news of the week.
Yeah, lots of it.
All right, so there's lots of stuff going on. This is another story that broke last night. I sent it to you. And this has to do with one of my favorite themes, the complete hypocrisy of the I mean, the MAGA movement, they're so hypocritical on many levels. But this concept, and this is beyond just MAGA, this concept that the United States is supposedly a country where you're free to say whatever you want. And that has become a rallying cry for MAGA whenever they want the right to say something that denigrates people that they have contempt for. Right. They feel they should have the right to say anything they want. But if you dare to utter any kind of criticism of MAGA, they're like, they fall into a fetal position and start crying like babies.
Sorry about that.
Oh yeah. No, that's okay. And so I'm talking now about Elon Musk, the revelation by Don Lemon that he was let go of by Elon Musk, and I'll set it up. Don Lemon, of course, is the newscaster, used to be on CNN, and he apparently cut a deal to do a show with Elon Musk on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. And the opening of the show would be an interview with Elon Musk, and he asked, I didn't even think they were that tough, questions of Elon Musk and his inconsistencies on the issue of taking criticism. Musk shut down the interview and then announced a little while later that he was severing his deal with Don Lemon to allow Don Lemon to have a show on X. I mean, if that's not Exhibit A of the complete inconsistency of the whole free market principle, the whole opposition to cancel culture, Elon Musk reserves the right to cancel any culture he wants to at any given time. He just wants to be able to say whatever he wants, and he wants Nazis to be able to say whatever they want, and racists to say whatever they want, anti-Jewish people to say whatever they want. But if you say anything bad about him, gone. How did he get away with it, Mark?
Well, just remember where he's from.
South
Africa. Remember where he's from.
Take a little deeper dive into that.
Well, look, he's from a place where there is a minority group of people who have always, well, certainly have had control over there up until, you know, the Nelson Mandela era, but a small group of people who made up whatever rules that they want to make up without any concerns with anybody else, as long as it fit their narrative. That's the culture that he was raised in. And then here is a black man who is questioning him. I think that Don Lemon did it on purpose. I think he did it on purpose. I think that Don Lemon, if you ask Don Lemon, that he was asking those pointed questions, if he didn't think in his mind that that would be could be the end. I don't think that anybody, when I saw it, you know, it's the first thing that I thought. He did this on purpose. He did it on purpose. He said, I'm going to ask him these questions. If he fires me, he fires me. And more than likely, he's going to fire me. That's just my, I don't think that you could have, in any reasonable thinking, asked those questions and not ask yourself that this guy, Elon Musk, who is the tyrannical narcissist of all narcissists, would not have retaliated. You're sleeping in a whole another world, sleeping in another world. So I can't believe that Don Lemon did not calculate that in his mind, that this more than likely would be the end result. Really doesn't matter. I mean, he got a multi-million dollar settlement from CNN, so he's not going to be looking, you know, making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for a while, right? So I think that this was Don Lemon's moment to just kind of stick his finger in Elon Musk's eye.
So bizarre. If your theory is correct, and as I absorb it, I'm starting to think, oh, I think Mark's onto something here. Shows you again how naive I am. I didn't think it through to that point. But just like, think about this. Don Lemon cut a deal with Elon Musk. if your theory is true, then that whole deal was a pretext to getting fired so that he could then use getting fired to advance his brand, which is one of, if it's true, just shows you he's like playing the game five moves ahead of everyone else, or at least me, if you follow what I'm saying. I would have, my guess would, oh, he cut a deal with Elon Musk because he wanted to get his name and his show and his brand out to the millions and millions of people who still have their addiction to Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. But what you're saying now is that, no, he did the whole thing knowing that he could ultimately get fired immediately, which would just advance his brand even more. Wow, brilliant move.
I don't see how you come to any other reasonable conclusion at the questions that you ask your boss. Are you on dope? Have you been drinking?
Yeah.
I mean, who asked the, nobody would ask their boss that question, even knowing, even if they knew that they were, you're not going to ask that question to your boss.
But your boss presumably is a man dedicated to the belief that nothing is off limits. Your boss is dedicated to the belief that Nazis deserve,
as long as it wasn't a black man asking him the question.
Do you think he would have put up with the question from me?
More than he would Don Lemon.
Yeah. I'd have been fired too, I think, but maybe not. I ask this, and I know they're, I ask this in jest, but this goes to absolutely everybody who out there cries about cancel culture. Stop it. Because none of you can handle criticism. And this goes, this isn't just Elon Musk, Mark.
It's anybody.
It's anybody. I watch so many comedians, like they'll post a comic from the 80s or the 90s, and they go, he couldn't get away with that today. You know, and Dave Chappelle's fans, whenever Dave Chappelle gets in trouble with the trans community, they go, he's just speaking his mind. They're trying to cancel his culture. But if you criticize Dave, he won't even let you bring a camera in to take a picture of him in a, he controls his brand so much. Do you follow what I'm saying? It's yeah. Like everybody wants the right to insult whoever they want, but you, they're so thin-skinned when it comes to themselves.
Yeah.
And I believe this is bigger than Elon Musk, and to a large degree, as a cultural phenomenon. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's bigger than that, but I think you're right that nobody wants to be criticized. Look, little old me went to speak at a little, small, nice little coffee house on behalf of Mary Flowers last Sunday. I guess it was Sunday or Saturday. And I called out to three people, the three henchmen, who are all of a sudden trying to take Mary Flowers out. Chris Welch, who is the Speaker of the House. Derek Curtis, who's the dumbest council person on the city council. And Willie Preston, who is the first time senator, who, and I called them out by name. Within 2 hours, I got a phone call from Willie Preston, who was all upset that I said that I was coming after him. When I said, actually, I was coming after all three of them for what they're doing. So to your point about criticism, people just today don't think that they could be criticized. And I just don't understand where that comes from. Where you're so thin-skinned, you're in the public's eye. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you are in the public eye. Somebody is going to criticize you. Yeah. I don't care who you are. You're going to be criticized.
Yeah.
But if you're moving with whatever your convictions are, you know, as long as those criticisms are not consistent with, you know, your character lacking, then I don't think you really need to be worried about it, but I don't think that everybody who expresses an opinion or raises a question to somebody should be fired for every question that they ask. Although, you know, I don't know, I can say somebody asked me that question and I was their boss, but I fire them. No, I would just respond to the question.
Well, all right, just a moment of self-promotion. Mary Flowers was a guest on the show last week. You can hear that recording. And State Senator Willie Preston was on about a month ago. You can hear that recording. And I'm talking about something very particular. I understand criticism stings. It hurts in some cases. And
sometimes it's good.
And sometimes it's healthy. It can be, it helps you. So yeah, it's a complicated thing, but there is a part that stings. I understand that. I'm not saying that's unusual. What I'm saying is something very specific, is that we've created this movement against cancel culture, which is being promulgated by people who reserve the right to cancel culture. And so it's like everything else with MAGA, fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
They reserve the right to cancel someone else's culture, but they don't want their culture to be canceled. And right. I believe they're sending out this message that somehow, which is an inconsistent message, that anybody who objects to what they say is a snowflake and a wimp.
Anybody who objects to what a certain group of white men say. That's where this is. They want to go back to Jim Crow and before. That's where what this whole MAGA thing is. Donald Trump is the he is the poster banner for these people who have always thought that way, mm-hmm. and for this culture who didn't have a platform to have their bigotry on the main stage. And Donald Trump is the one who has given them license to, you now are free to operate within that space, yeah. because I am going to be your protector.
Yeah.
That is. So the, you know, cancel culture thing, people get canceled for saying the wrong things, you know, Jimmy DeGreek, you know, all these people who said some awful things that, you know, they should have been canceled. But the idea that, you know, as you say, in the mega world, that there is no reasoning with unreasonable people. You can't rationalize, you know, irrationality. So, and that's what that is. It's not hard to understand, but that's who they are. If it's not the way that they say it is, they don't care about reality. They're not interested in reality. That's not what they're interested in. Because if they were to sit back and listen to some of the crazy things that they say and think about it, even they themselves would say, that's crazy. But they're not interested in that. They're interested in power and control,
yeah.
period.
And what they can do to advance their power and advance their control. All right, let's move on to this other topic that broke today. Everything's like breaking today. And when I saw this story, I said, oh, what a fortuitous moment that Mark Wallace would be the guest, because Mark knows a thing or two, to put it mildly, about the real estate game, and having been in it for many years. So here's the headline that broke this morning. It's from the New York Times. But it's everywhere right now in America. Powerful realtor group agrees to slash commissions to settle lawsuits. The National Association of Realtors will pay $418 million in damages and will amend several rules that housing experts say will drive down housing costs. Ow. Help us unpack this a little bit, Mark. What is at stake here with this settlement? Go ahead.
Well, what's at stake is that realtors are not just going to be able to just go take some pictures of a house and put it up on a website and bring some buyers in. And the investor who is plunked down a lot of their money, or homeowners who have paid for a property, and when they go to sell it, they got to give, you know, 5 or 6% of that up just for somebody writing a contract. Or putting it on an MLS that, in many respects, they don't do any work. I shouldn't say any work, but you know, they it's not commensurate with what people are paying to sell their homes. I think that they should be paid something, but I think that the 5% and 6% commissions, I think for a long time, many people have thought that that was unfair. You put your property on this, or a home or a person who is looking to buy a property goes and gets a broker. And that broker just gets a commission just because they brought the person to the house. Or I've even sold properties where somebody has seen my property, interested in buying the property. Then they go and have a conversation, and the commissioner, the real estate broker says, well, let me be your agent. I can get a commission and you don't have to pay it. The seller has to pay it just because of, yeah. So I think that it's not what's at stake. I think that it brings it more in line to make it fairer, make it fairer. I have a relationship with my broker that I say to the broker, because the way that I do my properties, I build my properties, renovate my properties to market. The only thing that I want somebody to be able to do when they walk into one of my properties is to say, I like it or I don't like it. I can afford it or I can't afford it. I don't want them to come in and say, oh, the work is terrible here. I want them to have the wow effect. So I don't cut corners. And I don't cut corners behind the walls, and I don't cut corners in front of the walls. So when you buy a property from me, I'm 42 years in the business. I've never been sued for selling somebody a substandard or defective property. Or if there was a problem, they have my telephone number. We go back and we take care of it. So my point is that the property sells itself. If somebody has to sell your property, there is a problem with the property. If somebody has to sell it, there's something wrong with the property. The property should sell itself. So to pay somebody $30,000, $25,000 of a purchase price just for putting your property online or for showing somebody your house and writing a contract seems, and always has seemed, pretty exorbitant and not really equitable. So I think that this really brings it in. Not to mention that they tack on all these other fees that they make you pay. You have to stage your home. That costs you $3,000 or $4,000, depending upon, it could cost you more, depending upon the size of your home. So I don't think that there's anything at stake, except for either realtors are going to say, I have to find another job, or
yeah,
realtors are going to have to work hard to find buyers for your property so that they don't have to split the commission with someone else. Because listing agents, right? Listing agents, they just list your property. Those are the people, you know, who really make the money, because in years past, it was getting the listing. You get the listing, you don't have to bring anybody there. If you've got a whole boatload of listings, the selling agents have to bring the buyers that want it. You're going to get your commission anyway. So
explain what get the listing means.
So getting the listing is, you want to sell your property, you need a broker who is going to put your house on a multiple listing service.
Okay.
Right. So now that person has the listing and they put it out there. They don't even have to actively go find buyers for it, because it's on a multiple listing service. Now you have buyers who are looking to buy a home. So they go to another broker and says, I'm looking to buy a home. And the broker goes on the multiple listing and they see your home that's already been listed there. So they bring the buyer. Whether or not the listing broker ever goes to the house, that listing broker is going to get half of that commission.
Half of the commission.
Right.
Half of the 6%.
So there's an argument between the brokers who say who is doing the work and who's not doing the work. The listing agent says, well, nobody would know about your property if you don't have your property listed. And the selling agent says, hey, I brought the buyer. So, you know, the person who pays the bill is the seller of the property, not even the buyer. You don't list your properties at a certain price so that you can cover the commission. You could only sell your property based on what the market has determined that that property can sell for in that particular market. The agent has nothing to do with how much money you get or you don't. They just, in a lot of cases, want to get the commission, and they're going to get their commission. Even if you list your property for $500,000 and you have to sell it for $450,000, the agent is still going to get 6% of that $450,000.
That's the agent, or you're talking about the agent who put it on the, got the listing. What about the agent for the buyer who saw it?
The agent for the buyer gets half of the commission.
So it's 6% total that the seller pays, and it's split between the two.
Or 5%, right? Okay. Like I pay an average of 5%. So my broker puts the cooperating commission at 2.5% on the listing. And what happens is, if you as a seller say, no, I only want to pay 2%. Guess what's going to happen? Your property is going to sit because the selling brokers are going to just pass by your property, because the poor homeowner or potential buyer, they can't go on and get it. Now, nowadays you can, because you can go on all these different websites, but most people can't do that. So, but the real estate broker who looks at your property and it sees that it's only 2%, they're not going to do it, because they have to pay, you know, administration fees and that sort of things that they have to pay. So out of that 0.5%, so that cuts into their commission. So it is the seller who absorbs 100% of the cost, not to mention that you have to pay 5 or 6% in commission, but you also in some cases have to pay 3 or 4% in seller credits to the buyer to help the buyer. When you're in a soft market and you're trying to market your property, and when it's a buyer's market, they want you to pay 2 or 3% of their closing costs, which is 2 or 3% of the purchase price of the home. So you're paying 5% in commissions, plus you're paying another 3%, plus you have to pay your closing costs. By the time that you sold your property, you could sell a $500,000 property and pay $50,000 out the door.
Oh, Lord. So, okay. So as a result of this settlement, will the 5 to 6% that you have to pay fall?
I'm not sure how that is going to be, but it, you know, they're saying that this is a settlement. So I'm not sure how that's going to shake out. You know, this is a lawsuit that we thought was going to take a long time. So This lawsuit got settled pretty quickly.
Well, the real estate industry settled it because they thought that if they persisted, the payout would even be higher.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's typically why everybody sells, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so, it's true. They didn't do it out of the kindness of their heart. You know, I feel we were ripping the people off for all these years. Right. The time has come to settle up.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's, how do I put this? I'll relate it to bring Chicago home. So, Bring Chicago Home is an attempt to take advantage, if you will, of the market, the real estate market, to create a pool of money to help poor people. All mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's what it's intended to do. The commission game is set up to create a pool of money to help, I don't know which, they could be rich, they could be middle class to rich brokers. When you're putting on, this is so classic, when you put the Bring Chicago Home tax on the market to help the poor people, the real estate industry is like, oh my God, it's going to destroy the real estate market. You cannot do this. When you put the commission on, I never hear them once complain about
not
the
once.
You ever notice that?
Mark? Never. Not once. Not once.
True.
Yeah. And the yeah. whole bring home Chicago thing mm-hmm. is, you know, it is just astonishing. You're talking about forget about cancel culture. I cannot believe that people can write and sit down, intelligent people, and write these scripts out knowing that they're lies and put the, and pay hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to promote these lies. The whole bring home Chicago thing or transfer stamp, this is a one-time, gradual, marginal tax on not the entire $1.5 million or over $1 million. It's the difference between $1 million and what's and over that that you pay just a little bit more.
Yeah, marginal. Yep.
Mm-hmm. A very marginal amount. And you have BOMA or whoever this group is going around saying, ooh, your rent is going to go up and your property taxes are going up. This has nothing to do with property taxes. The person who is hosing you with property taxes, his name is Larry Rogers Jr. That's the person that you need to be going at, but that's a different subject. But the whole bring home Chicago thing, it is another layer of whenever you're asking people who are of a certain tax bracket to contribute a little bit more, that you have poor people and people who are not in that tax bracket defending them. It's yeah.
No, I
you remember the fair tax.
Oh, we were just talking about it yesterday. With
bad messaging.
Yeah. So then we get into the issue of messaging. And so let's think about this. Just think about this, Mark. So the Bring Chicago Home referendum is mm-hmm. so convoluted. I would venture that most people who are counter it for the first time won't know what it's getting at. The actual language itself of Bring Chicago, that you will have to vote on when you go to the polls. And but it mentions that some people will get a tax cut and some people will have to pay more. All right. That's essentially
probably 95% of the people who sell a property are going to get a tax cut.
Okay. So here's how you talk about branding. That message, that language that points out that some people get a cut and some people will pay more, was challenged in a lawsuit by the real estate industry and was mm-hmm. successful with a judge. So you talk about branding and messaging, like the most compelling argument for Bring Chicago Home for the average Chicago homeowner, the compelling reason to vote for it is that it will lower the amount they pay in taxes when they sell their home.
No, like, lower the amount that you pay when you buy it.
A judge said you can't say that.
But he's wrong.
Or she? Yeah, and she was overruled. But
yes, she was wrong.
She was wrong, and she was overruled, and the matter will go before the public anyway. But
yes.
Precious moments were lost, where it was uncertain whether the matter would even be up to the voters to decide. There's probably some voters out there who think it's not, are unsure if it even is a relevant matter on the ballot. May not vote for it anyway.
No, most people who think about it think about that it's some sort of trick.
Yeah,
I had a meeting with probably 40, 50 people in my committee who all were concerned about it. They all didn't understand it. But when I explained it like a kindergarten, they all got it. I sent a three-way text, and I probably shouldn't have, but I did. a three-way text to Brandon and his people that if this goes down, it's going to go down because of poor, and I use the word poor, poor messaging, because it is poor message. It's too convoluted.
Yeah.
If all you would say to people is that if you're buying a property, 95% of you will pay less in a tax when you're buying the property. Only the wealthier people buying a property will pay a little bit more when buying that property. It's a one-time tax. But all of this, almost, you have to be a constitutionalist to understand the question.
Yeah.
The way that they draft these, I don't even know who it is that's sitting behind these desks drafting these questions to go on the ballot.
It, essentially, the way it works in terms of the public, this is how it works. If they see, most people, to your point, do not understand at all the verbiage in this question. So they'll look to see who supports it. If a political group or a politician that they respect and like and appreciate is supporting it, they will support it. If they see the Chamber of Commerce or the real estate lobby is against it, and that's where their affinities lie politically, they will vote against it.
Yes.
And that is very similar to what went down with the fair tax.
Well, the fair tax was lost because, number one, they changed the name of it. They changed the name of it at the 11th hour and 59th minute to something else.
Yeah.
And so they made it even more confusing. It was the messaging that lost that. With all of the money that Pritzker put out on this, it was poor messaging, which killed the fair tax.
I remember, I've said this a few times in the mic already, former Governor Pat Quinn in the studio saying that you absolutely have to link a rise in the estate income tax, even on the wealthiest people, to a cut in the property tax. And then it will pass. I remember him saying that. And it's the same principle, basically, that they were trying to adhere to with this transfer tax, this real estate transfer tax, trying to establish to people that you will get a cut if this passes. Do you follow what I'm saying? And the language is so confusing that people may not realize that. And that's the part that the judge ruled against. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't in Cook County, Mark. And
we're always talking about taxes, taxes, taxes. But here you're saying that people were going to lower your taxes. And all they had to say was that we are lowering the one-time transfer tax.
Yes.
We're going to lower the one-time transfer tax on homes that are $1 million or less, on homes that are over $1 million, they're going to pay a marginal increase of the transfer tax when you buy the home.
Yeah.
Right? They made everybody think that you now have to pay an increase in property taxes. They have linked this to the assessor's office, which has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, no, it's... Listen,
it has nothing to do with property taxes.
And so we're talking now about a lack of truthfulness.
Yes.
And you mentioned it in the regards to this transfer tax issue, and we mentioned it in regards to the fair tax, where they said it would raise the tax. It would slap a tax on retirement income, which did nothing. People feel free just to make stuff up. I'll go back to the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that states do not have a right to regulate their own ballots when it comes to federal elections, which is completely inconsistent with the language of the Constitution that the Supreme Court is supposed to be upholding. So, Mark, that's where we are in America right now. Okay.
Yes.
Nothing is real.
Nothing is real. Nothing is real. And here it is. Everything that we want, we're going to have to win it at the ballot box.
Yeah.
We don't have a judiciary to protect even that.
Right.
But, you know, the idea that when it comes to municipalities and governments needing money, they don't go to the poor people. They don't go to the working class and say, hey, we're going to raise your taxes. Can we put this on the ballot? And we want to see what you have to say. They just do it. They just do it, right? They gave us a bag tax. We're going to, hey, we got too much plastic around. We need more money. We're going to tax bags, 7 cents, right? We didn't get to vote on that.
No. Yeah.
You want some soft drinks? We're going to put, you know, a penny on every ounce of sugar drinks that you get. We didn't get to vote on that.
That was the one where there was a revolution.
Well, there was a revolution.
Mini revolution, quote.
Yeah, it was a mini revolution on that. But yeah. I'm just saying, when it comes to putting taxes on working class people and poor people, they don't have a voice in it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to asking people who have wealth to pay a little bit more, we got to vote on it.
Absolutely.
We got to have a measure on it because we have to protect that class.
Well,
but
put.
Most people who are wealthy, if you go to them and say, would you be willing to give a little bit more to help some very poor people? Most people would say, I'm open to that. Mm-hmm. I'm open to that. Now, I think it's a fair question for people to say, if I'm giving a little bit more and if I'm giving, is this money really going to be used to help poor people?
Well, that's
the credibility problem that Chicago has.
Yes. And not just Chicago, but government in general. That was working against the fair tax as well. And I've spent a good deal of my career as a journalist in Chicago pointing out how money is wasted. So there's a part of me that always in the back of my mind, like whenever I feel like I'm advocating for more money for fill in the blank, any cause. And I realize that the way our governments operate, so much of it is wasted.
Oh, there's so much waste that if you and I sat down and saw the waste of money that are just pouring out of our governments, from our local governments all the way to our federal government, we would be absolutely astonished to know that we have billions and billions of dollars that are being wasted that we could use. I mean, I was down in Cabrini Green the other day, and I did not realize that, I forget the section of Cabrini Green, where they still have a lot of the row houses that are completely vacant, completely empty.
Right.
Right. And that's all over, you know, the south side and the west side, where we have all these properties. The truth of the matter is, we probably don't have to raise taxes if we would just cut some of the waste and stop some of the, you know, the extortion that is going out of the window, like what's happening at the Board of Review, right? If we stop that sort of thing and stop politicians from being the bidders from wealthy people who don't want to pay their fair share, if they just paid their fair share and we got those resources to help poor people, we might not have to do bring home Chicago tax thing. Yeah. So the waste on both sides is just, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. And I'm not going to leave private people off the hook here. The waste in the lot. We're going to read a 50% wealthy people buying private jets, more than one.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely. I contend that we shouldn't have billionaires in the first place. There should be no billionaires. I just don't think that people should be billionaires when you have people who are starving. I know that somebody's going to say, "Man, what is this guy, a communist or a socialist?" The point is the extraordinary. Listen, I'm in business, right? I'm in business, but people having billions and billions of one person, billions and billions of dollars is just so over the top. Thank you, Ronald Reagan, for exploding billionaires in the country the way we have today. I mean, CEOs earning 500 times that of the average employee that before Ronald Reagan, there was, I think, the highest was about 30.
Well, he was the first step toward eradicating progressivity, that movement that's been advanced ever since.
Yes.
With the 86 tax bill, which, all right, does breaking news, as we close out this conversation, live updates. This is from the New York Times, just broke. Nathan Wade resigns from Trump case after judge's conflict of interest ruling. The romance between District Attorney Fannie Willis and Mr. Wade, the lawyer she hired to manage the Georgia election case, created the, quote, appearance of impropriety, the judge said.
Yes.
So we didn't even finish the conversation, Mark, and Nathan Wade stepped down. He realized that the case has to continue and he has to leave.
That was a given.
That was a given. So
that was a given. We knew that was happening. Just what time was it going to happen?
So there were so many things I wanted to talk about that we didn't get to, which is just as well because they're not going anywhere. The Ed Burke pension recusal case was a favorite conversation this week.
Oh my!
And I might as well give you the floor to close it down. We talked about this former alderman Ed Burke. He wanted to continue. The issue is whether he should be stripped of his law license after he's been convicted of fraud by a Cook County jury. And in a case that dealt with how he manipulated people into hiring his law firm for property tax appeals, it came before the Supremes, and the Supremes could not render a decision. So he gets to keep his law license because four judges recuse themselves. And for the life of me, I do not know why any of them felt compelled to recuse themselves, because if they had a relationship with Ed Burke, a friendly relationship with Ed Burke, so what if they're taking something away from him? If I could see the recusal issue if they were voting to allow him to keep his law license, but they would be voting to strip him of his license. The things we call a conflict of interest, Mark Wallace, are not really conflicts of interest. The floor is yours to say what you will. Go.
This is a man who is convicted of 13 of 14 counts of racketeering, bribery, and attempted extortion in a federal court brought by a grand jury, charged, tried, and convicted, who the Supremes gave cover to and protected. 8 years ago, a young black woman won the primary vote to become a judge in Cook County, and another Cook County judge, sitting judge, who was in early stages of dementia, nobody knew about it at the time, had her to preside over traffic cases, and they charged this young woman, took her license, and the day that she was to go to court, she took her life. And here is a man who is convicted of selling the office that he was in, the longest serving alderman, of 13 federal racketeering, bribery, and attempted extortion. The Supreme Court says, Burke, we're going to step out of the office so you can keep practicing law, earning millions of dollars in fines and still continuing to carry on your criminal enterprise. We, as the Illinois State Supreme Court justices, we're going to sanction it. That's what they did. Sanction a criminal and say to him, continue on conducting your crimes, even though you're convicted. That's essentially what they have said.
And the irony is that Burke's lawyer told the papers that Burke didn't even want to continue practicing law. So we'll see about that.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? He doesn't practice law. All he does is fills out some papers and sends them down to the Board of Review, gets a wealthy property owner, a tax. Do you realize how much money?
Wait, by the way, I don't even know that he fills out the papers.
Well, his clerk does.
Yeah.
Maybe his clerk does. And his name is just on it.
Yeah, thank you.
Listen, this man got Donald Trump a $29 million tax cut. Do you know what his commission was or his fee was? $7.2 million. That's what those tax appeal attorneys get. They get 25% of whatever they save you on your taxes. But the $29 million, you and I paid our fair share of it.
Yeah, no, we pay every nickel that Donald Trump doesn't have to pay. We have to pay, we the people.
Yeah.
Because you have to think of, this is how it was explained to me, and I've always used this analogy. So all the taxes that government consumes, you think of a barrel and you're filling it with water. Mm-hmm. And you just got to fill the barrel with water. Who puts what in is a very subjective thing. All we know is we have to fill the barrel with water. So if Donald Trump only has to put one scoop in, Mark and Ben have to put two scoops in to compensate for what Donnie didn't put in.
Well, I like to say it this way. We pay for Donald Trump's family to go to Maitre's Steakhouse. They have a nice steak, nice juicy steak, glass of wine with them, their family. And we sit in our living rooms and we pay for it. That's the way I like this. We pay for them to go have a steak dinner on us.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't even get to have a free smell like Jimmy John's give you.
No. And all this conversation of steak has just made me hungry. So we're going to have to close down this conversation so I get some lunch. Mark Wallace, thank you very much for taking time to talk to me. Always appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you soon, real soon. All right. That's Mark Wallace. I also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And Mark agrees with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Make sure you head to ChicagoReader.com. Stay updated on all things Jurofsky, all things Chicago, all things that you want to know at ChicagoReader.com. If you want to find Ben on Instagram, it's at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow, and tell your friends about the Ben Jurofsky Show.